When Jesus heard what had happened, he withdrew by boat privately to a solitary place. Hearing of this, the crowds followed him on foot from the towns. When Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them and healed those who were ill. As evening approached, the disciples came to him and said, "This is a remote place and it's already getting late. Send the crowds away so that they can go to villages and buy themselves some food." Jesus replied, "They do not need to go away. You give them something to eat." "We have here only 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish," they answered. "Bring them here to me," he said. And he told the people to sit down on the grass. Taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish and looking up to heaven, he gave thanks and broke the loaves. Then he gave them to the disciples and the disciples gave them to the people. They all ate and were satisfied. And the disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces that were left over. The number of those who ate was about 5,000 men, besides women and children.
Life is marvellous. You can eat it in the street, at home, in the office, anywhere.
When I'm really hungry, that is just right. It's absolutely perfect. Because of the old chum, you know.
It's very nutty. It's very filling.
Keeps your hunger at bay. Keeps my hunger at bay anyway.
Enjoyed that advert. So it's marathons, for those of you who are younger than me probably, are Snickers bars. That's what they used to be called. And they're really satisfying. They were branded as more than just a chocolate bar because they filled you up, packed with peanuts. They're so satisfying. I wonder what satisfies you. Sorry, a bit cheesy there, isn't it? When I was doing my preparation for this sermon, I spent a bit of time in a cafe, and I overheard a conversation with between 3 ladies on a neighboring table. Two of the ladies seemed to know each other reasonably well, and one of the ladies didn't know the others that well, and she seemed to contradict many of the things that the other two were saying. Everything that they were talking about, she knew better. Nothing could please this lady. And her conversation ended by her getting up and saying, "I'm too intelligent for this," and walking off. And you can imagine the kind of things that the other two then said about her afterwards. She found fault with everything. Everything was meaningless. In fact, it was extremely depressing. Listening to her talking, nothing was satisfying for her. And I don't know what satisfies you. Maybe you find satisfaction in different things. Maybe you find satisfaction in watching sport. I used to find satisfaction in watching sport. Last night brought home to me the fact that I find too much satisfaction in sport. But I don't know, what do you find satisfaction? And maybe, can you recognize some of the seeds of what that lady had in her heart, in your own heart? Some of the seeds, maybe. A kind of disappointment with things in your life. Maybe you've been let down too many times by people, projects, things haven't worked out. Can you recognize some seeds of that? Dissatisfaction with lots of things. Well, this morning we're going to find out what truly satisfies. It's not a Snickers bar. It is something much better than a Snickers bar. Let's recap on the story. So please do keep your Bibles open. And we're going through Matthew's Gospel, an account of the life of Jesus. We're about halfway through. He's doing amazing things. He's teaching with authority. He's healing people. He's getting into He's coming up against the religious leaders who are accusing him of being demon-possessed. He's teaching about the kingdom of God, a kingdom that might look small and insignificant now, but is one day going to grow to become massive. A kingdom that is as incredible and amazing as treasure that you would find in a field. A kingdom that some people are going to miss out on. And some people are going to be judged so that they miss out on. Last Sunday we looked at Herod and the feast that he had for his birthday. A feast that ended up with a drunken men lusting after a young girl and a drunken king promising her anything she wanted. That ended with a good man, a prophet, having his head chopped off. That was the feast that came before our passage that we're reading today. And when Jesus heard about this, he heard about his cousin, as Jason was saying, his cousin having his head chopped off, and hearing about Herod thinking, okay, this must be Jesus, this must be John the Baptist who's raised from the dead. Jesus heard about this, and he wanted to go off to a quiet, solitary place to pray. But the crowds don't let him. Maybe they can see his boat from the shore. They follow it round. And there are thousands of them clamoring to get to him. And Jesus can see them from a while off as the boat nears the shore. And what is he feeling? Thousands of people. He wants a moment's peace. He's just heard his cousin has been killed. He wants time alone. He's tired. And how does he feel? How would you feel? Tired, exasperated, maybe the opposite end of the spectrum. Maybe you'd feel proud, smug. Look at all these people who are here to see me. They can't get enough of me. Maybe that's the way that you would go. But how does Jesus feel? He had compassion on them. That's not a weak word. It's not a word that's just saying, oh, look at those poor people. He was physically moved by them. It's a strong word. He sees the mass of people and he loves them. And he wants to attend to their needs. And he does that. They've brought their sick, so he heals them. Time is getting on. There are thousands of people. He's going through them, healing them, talking to a few here and there, maybe a kiss for a child here and there. And now we see the first mention of the disciples. We haven't seen them yet in this passage. We don't know where they were. Were they in the boat with Jesus? We don't know. Matthew doesn't say. That's not important. What's important comes now in terms of the disciples. They think time's getting on. We haven't had our food. Jesus hasn't had his food. The crowd haven't had their food. They don't seem to have brought their packed lunch with them. We've got to do something about this. Jesus, send the crowd away so they can go and buy their own food. That's their solution to the problem. It's not a great solution. They're in a remote place. If they were to go to the villages around, then, well, where are they going to buy food that late in the day for those many thousands of people? So it's not the best solution. What does Jesus do? Have a look at verse 16. They do not need to go away. You give them something to eat. Come on, Jesus. Let's not make a joke about this. We're too hungry. And it's not our problem. We didn't ask for these guys to come and follow you. Okay, they're adults, most of them at least. They can make their own minds up. Okay, it's not our problem. But Jesus is still waiting for an answer. So, well, we've basically nothing, Jesus. We've got 5 loaves and 2 fish. But what good is that? We know from John's account, these have come from a small boy's dinner. But what good is a little boy's dinner in the face of 10, 12, who knows how many thousand people, adults? Jesus says, bring them here to me. And he tells the people to sit down on the grass. He takes the 5 loaves and 2 fish. He looks up to heaven. That's a fairly standard thing to do when you're praying. He gives thanks, a fairly standard thing to do before a meal. And he breaks the loaves. Again, fairly normal, nothing special there. And then he gave them to the disciples. The disciples gave them to the people. Well, hang on. 5 loaves, 2 fish. You give them to one disciple, he hands them out to a few people maybe. But to thousands of people, what's going on here? Do you know that this is the only story in the gospel accounts, apart from about Jesus' birth, his death, and his resurrection, that all four gospel writers include? It's the only story. That's quite fascinating, isn't it? It must have made a huge impression on all the disciples, on all those thousands of people, for to be the only story that Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John all record, with the exception of his birth, death, and resurrection. But, okay, here come the skeptics. Okay, I can understand there being a bit of a miracle here. Maybe Jesus gets some food out and then he provokes others to get their food out. Some haven't got food, they share it with them, and everyone basically eats. It's a miracle of people being a bit generous with their own food. But it's not 5,000 people eating 5 loaves and 2 fish. That doesn't happen. But look at what Matthew says. This is what really happened. 5 loaves, 2 fish distributed to the 5,000 people. No mention of their own food. Matthew believes this, and it was written reasonably soon after Jesus' death, within the lifetime of many of these people who'd eaten. Now, so if this was not how it happened, they could have come up and said, hang on, this isn't how it happened. I was there, and it wasn't just 5 loaves and 2 fish. I had my food as well. And we'd see evidence of that in other accounts. But there is no evidence in other accounts. Okay, cry the skeptics. Jesus did share out just 5 loaves and 2 fish, but everyone just had a small taste, and that was enough. That's what really happened. But does Matthew allow for that in his account? Verse 20, they all ate and were satisfied. And then one verse later, disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces that were left over. Matthew is clearly saying it starts with 5 loaves and 2 fish, and 5,000 men, not including women and children, eat. They're all satisfied, and there's plenty left over. There's no room for anything else in Matthew's account. No, I can't prove this happened to you, that this happened. But no one can prove that it didn't happen. So we're even, aren't we? We can't prove it either way. So if you are skeptical, what I would ask, here's my suggestion. Read the rest of Matthew's account and ask yourself the question, is this guy Jesus a guy that I would like to get to know better? Is he a man who is worth asking questions about? Rather than thinking, could this really have happened? That's my suggestion to you. Now, when the Jews saw Jesus share out this these 5 loaves and 2 fish, they would have had some pictures in their mind. Jews who knew the Old Testament much better than us. For us, it's a simple story of 5,000 people were getting fed. Quite incredible, but not much more to it than that. But to Jews who knew their Old Testament well, a few different pictures would have been going on in their head. For some, they would have thought back to Elisha. Heard of him? A prophet who came after Elijah. As an account in 2 Kings chapter 4, verses 42 to 44. Here it goes. A man came from Baal Shalishah, bringing the man of God, that's Elisha, 20 loaves of barley bread baked from the first ripe grain. By the way, we know from John's Gospel that the 5 loaves were barley loaves. Along with some heads of new grain. Elisha said, give it to the people to eat. How can I set this before 100 men? His servant asked. But Elisha answered, give it to the people to eat. For this is what the Lord says, they will eat and have some left over. Then he set it before them, and they ate and had some left over, according to the word of the Lord. Sound familiar, doesn't it? A similar story about a man of God providing a small amount of food for a larger group of people, people being satisfied, some being left over. So some Jews would have been thinking, aha, a prophet like Elisha, who's come after a man like Elijah and doing greater things than Elijah, who's providing food from a small amount to a larger group of people and having some left over. Some would have thought that. Other Jews may have thought back to the time when the Israelites were first in the desert after they'd escaped from, after they'd been rescued by God from Egypt. They were in the wilderness, hungry with no bread. And here's what happened. Exodus 16:12, in the morning you will be filled with bread, and then you will know that I am the Lord your God. And so God fed them with bread each morning, manna from heaven, for those 40 years while they were in the desert. And now here is a man who might be a prophet in a deserted place. Same word, desert, deserted place. I know there's grass in this account, so it's not the kind of desert that we're thinking about with sand dunes, but same word. Here's a man in a desert feeding God's people with bread so that they're filled, they're satisfied. Some people would have been thinking about that story. And others would have thought about another one. An event that Isaiah spoke about, a great feast. A feast which hadn't happened yet, but he spoke about in his prophecy, chapter 25. You might know this these few verses well, because they're great verses. Here Isaiah says, on this mountain, the Lord Almighty will prepare a feast of rich food for all peoples, a banquet of aged wine, the best of meats and the finest of wines. On this mountain, he will destroy the shroud that enfolds all people, the sheet that covers all nations. He will swallow up death forever. The sovereign Lord will wipe away the tears from all faces. He'll remove his people's disgrace from all the earth. Because of Isaiah's prophecy, the Jews were looking forward to this future feast. Jesus talks about this future feast earlier on in Matthew's account. Chapter 8, verse 11. Here goes what Jesus says. I say to you, many will come from the east and west, and they will take their places at the feast with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven. So Jesus has spoken about it. There clearly was this idea that there's going to be a future feast, the feast that Isaiah had talked about. And now here are large numbers of God's people sitting down. Well, actually, sitting isn't quite the best word for it. That's what we've got in our accounts. But the word that's used here is a word that would be used of people who are reclining at a dinner party. You know how they used to do in those kinds of times, kind of reclining on one elbow, kind of just nonchalantly reaching out for a grape, that kind of thing. Reclining at a dinner party, at a banquet, that's the word that's used. Might not have been particularly rich food, barley loaves and fish, but it was plenty and there was lots left over. Sounds like a feast to me. So, those are the kinds of pictures that many of the people there would have been thinking about, or at least later on, as they were thinking about that. Like Elisha, he fed hungry people. Like Moses, he gave bread to God's people in the desert, and he laid on a feast for God's people that pointed forward to the great feast in the future, when God's people will be fed, death will be swallowed up, and tears will end. Jesus well and truly satisfies. Jesus well and truly satisfies. So maybe you're asking yourself the question, well, if Jesus gave people bread then and he claimed to be the Son of God, then why doesn't God give bread to people now? Why are there Christians who are starving, who go hungry? It's not just about bread. It's not just about bread. We know of only two occasions when Jesus fed people. This time here, he fed 5,000 men and many women and children. A bit later, he fed 4,000. But there would have been plenty more times where he would have encountered hungry people. And we don't hear any more about that. Jesus gave God's people what they needed. Then it was bread as proof that he could give God's people what they need. But it's not just about bread. Even back in the wilderness after the Exodus from Egypt, it wasn't just about bread. This is what how God described that time, or Moses described that time. He, the Lord, he humbled you, causing you to hunger and then feeding you with manna, which neither you nor your ancestors had known, to what? To teach you that man does not live on bread alone, but on every word that comes from the mouth of the Lord. God didn't give them bread just because they were hungry. He gave them bread to teach them to go to him when they were in need, to trust him when they were in difficulty. Now, the Israelites were pretty slow to learn. When they were in difficulty, they may have gone to God, but only to grumble in his face, or gone to God's servant Moses to grumble, even to try and stone him. That's what happened with the Israelites. They didn't learn very quickly. Jesus gives God's people bread, not to say, you don't need bread shops anymore, I'm going to give you all the bread you ever want or need, but to show God's people that he will give them what they need. Bread, in this case, other things in different times. Jesus satisfies. Earlier, Jesus has said to his disciples, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Filled, same word as satisfied, same word in the original. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be satisfied. By satisfying you with bread, Jesus says, I can satisfy you with what you need, with everything that you need, with the righteousness that you need to stand before a holy God. I am the one who satisfies. Now, come on, Tom. We didn't come to church to be told that Jesus satisfies. This is all right for a kid's talk, okay? But come on, give us a bit more meat here. We might know that God gives us what we need, but do we live like that? I mean, that the disciples didn't. Look at them. That's what Matthew wants us to do, to look at the disciples. There's a problem. 10,000 people are hungry. They've only got 5 loaves, 2 fish. Jesus tests his disciples. You give them something to eat. Do they pass or they fail? They fail the test. They've been with Jesus, they've heard his authoritative teaching, they've seen him heal people, they've seen him raise a girl from the dead, they've seen him calm a storm. Could not the man who did all these things provide people with bread? As one commentator put it, it's like standing at the foot of Niagara Falls and wondering where to go to get a glass of water. That's what the disciples were doing. They were standing next to someone who demonstrated that he had the power and authority over sickness, death, Satan, nature, and wondering where they're going to go to get bread. You of little faith, why did you doubt? And are we any different? We've read about Jesus. We know the full story about his death and his resurrection. We've seen Jesus' glory displayed in our lives as we've come to know him, as he's worked in our hearts. And yet, we go elsewhere for satisfaction. When we're tired and need a boost, do we go to comfort food or TV soaps? Or do we go to Jesus? When we're depressed and need lifting up, do we go first to Facebook? Or do we go to Jesus? When we feel let down or dissatisfied, Do we bury ourselves in work or family? Or do we go to Jesus? When the team that we've put our hope in loses a match which they should have won against a team that had lost half their players to injury, when that team loses and makes it difficult for them to get through to the next stage, where do we go to satisfaction? Do we mope around and make life difficult for your wife? Or do you say, Jesus satisfies? God taught me last night that I wasn't being satisfied by Jesus, but was being satisfied by the hope that England would do well in the World Cup. And maybe for you it's sport, maybe for you it's something else. What is it that satisfies you, and why is it not Jesus? I mentioned the lady in the cafe who seemed to find no satisfaction in anything whatsoever. I spent some time this week with a different lady, this lady who goes to the Eastern Congregation. She'd been rushed to hospital last Sunday morning and in an ambulance with breathing difficulties. I saw her on Wednesday afternoon, and the doctors, she was doing much better. The doctors thought she had a lung infection. This is a lady who spoke virtually no English, who couldn't read in her own language, who was elderly and weak, and who by all accounts, had every right to be dissatisfied. And yet the time that I was with her, she spent praising God. I'm pretty sure she was praising God. I couldn't understand what she was saying. But she certainly looked like she was praising God, and her daughter did translate some of it for me. A lady who'd only come to know Christ a few years ago through the witness of Chris Andrews at the Day Center and others at the Day Center, who doesn't have very much, and yet, when going through trial and difficulty, praises God with joy in her face, evident to me and to the nurses and doctors around. The disciples are used by Jesus, and they do learn. They grow in faith, they grow in their trust in God as they stick close to him, as they watch him, as they're used by him. Matthew's got that emphasis in his gospel. He emphasizes, differently to Mark, Luke, and John, that Jesus gives it to the disciples, and the disciples distribute the bread and the fish to the people. And then they collect it up and fill their 12 basketfuls later on. Jesus uses the disciples. And as they see that Jesus provides and satisfies, they grow in their faith. Now, they're slow learners. Yeah, in the very next passage, which we'll see next Sunday, they doubt again. But then going from doubt, they go to worship. And we see the very first time, according to Matthew, that they worship Jesus. It's an up and down roller coaster ride of doubting, disbelieving, not trusting, seeing Jesus for who he is, sticking close to him, asking him questions. That is the life of these disciples. That is the life of us who've seen so much more. So let me finish by asking you three questions. Are you being satisfied by Jesus? Or are you going elsewhere for satisfaction? Maybe you've never come to the feast in the first place. You've heard about this Jesus bloke, but frankly, you're not interested. There are more important things around. Maybe you're like someone in the crowd who's come along a few times, tasted a bit of what Jesus has given, but you're not ready to commit your life to him. Only Jesus satisfies. No one else, not those closest to you, nothing else will ever satisfy except Jesus. Or secondly, maybe you call yourself a disciple. You've made a commitment to him. You've committed your life to him. Are you going to Jesus to be satisfied, or are you going somewhere else? Are you pointing others to Jesus and bringing them to Jesus to be satisfied? Are you being used by Jesus, like these disciples? Are you staying at a distance and just coming along here and there? Maybe like the disciples, you see a need, but standing at the foot of Niagara Falls and wondering where to go for water, you don't know where the solution to the need is. Take the refugee crisis. What should be our response to that? Well, maybe I shouldn't have mentioned this and only given it one line, but many different kinds of responses. We should be offering asylum and refuge and comfort and care and compassion and food and love and security as a country and employment and all these things to refugees who are fleeing chaos and war. But most of all, we should be pointing people to the only one who can satisfy, Jesus.